speaker, Yvette from Miami. Hi, family. I'm Yvette Amanati.
Hi, Yvette.
And I am nervous. Whew. I'm glad to be here, and you know, I just want to thank the program committee for inviting me and giving me the opportunity to speak at this meeting. And you know, last night I was like so anxious. My girlfriend told me about the meeting like a month or so ago, and I didn't want her to tell me the topic because I knew I would like fixate to death on it. So I got in Wednesday, and she told me. Then she told me, she said, you know, you might want to write notes. And I'm like, damn. You know, this room is bigger than our convention, you know, really. So last night I started having, you know, anxiety and thinking about my story and about my relationship with my higher power, who I choose to call God. And I couldn't sleep. So 2 o'clock in the morning, I'm up. So I go downstairs to the lobby. I ask the guy for a pen and a notepad. I start writing this. I'm like writing and writing this. Oh, I forgot. You know, I wound up today calling my sponsor, you know. I called her yesterday, too, but I called her again today because I didn't hear from her. And she said, well, you know, she said, just pray. You know, and that's what I've been doing, you know, like staying in prayer, you know, asking God to help me to give a message of recovery. And so that's what I'm going to try to do on this topic. More God-centered, less self-centered. And I just need to say that, you know, I'm still very self-centered. I've been around this program, not around, I've been clean since January of 88. And through God's grace and the people in this fellowship, I haven't had to use since that day. And I'm truly grateful. I also need to say that before I got here, I lived a life of complete self-centeredness. I remember at about 8 years of age, I made a decision. And it was based on a resentment of the people in the church that I wasn't going to do that anymore. And so I spent much of my life feeling as if, you know, God was good, but not for me. And, you know, when I got older and more intellectual, I turned myself an agnostic. Didn't believe in organized religion. Still got issues. I mean, I really have some issues, but that's okay. Because this program is a spiritual program, thank God. You know. And so at 8 years old, I made that decision, live my life in terms of, like, doing whatever I wanted to do. Thought it was okay. You know, found drugs, and that was my solution. And as we know what happens as our disease progresses, you know. As an adult, young adult, my higher power became the man that I was with. And he stayed that way for, like, 16 years. And my addiction just really continued to progress. And I remember many a time talking to a lady near the end of my addiction, a lady who I would consider somewhat spiritual. You know, I need to say I wasn't one of these kinds of addicts that, you know, prayed all the time when they got in trouble. I didn't do that. Clearly self-absorbed. But I met this lady, and I would talk to her about my life and my addiction. And so this man that I was with, who was my higher power at the time, suddenly died. And I went to her to let her know it's like he's, you know, he died. And she said, Yvette, you were praying for a different life. You just didn't know he would have to die for you to get it. And it, like, shocked me. I didn't think that meant for me to stop using, though. I thought it meant I could use like I wanted to use. Because as my higher power, he wouldn't allow me to use like I thought I needed to use. And so I went on like a 9-month run after his death. And I heard a lady speaking today about desperation, utter desperation. And after that 9 months, I reached that point of complete desperation where I couldn't stop using. And on New Year's Eve of 1987, I got down on my knees, and I don't know when it was that I had done that before, and I just asked for help. And I think, for me, that was like the beginning of me having a relationship with the God of my understanding and moving more towards being less self-centered. I didn't know it then. But within like 7 days, I was in a treatment center, and I went to my first Narcotics Anonymous meeting in that treatment center. And made a decision that I needed to be here. And, you know, after, when you first come here, and after like about, you know, 20-odd days, 30 days, you start gaining weight, start looking good. Everybody else looks good. And that prayer went out the window. Back in control. Back in doing what I wanted to do. And, you know, thank God for sponsorship. I started on my steps with a sponsor. My first sponsor was Nikki L. from New York. And, you know, I know she was God-sent. She always told me, I thought I knew her. I saw her at a meeting, heard her share, powerful speaker, awesome. And it's like, that's her. You know? And I thought I knew her. And she said, you know, God had you think that so you could ask me. You know, God is like really has always been in my life. I just wasn't aware. You know, I would be off doing my thing, and God would just tap me on the shoulder, knock me down, whatever. And so anyway, I started on my steps with Nikki, and great experience in going through that process, the step process. And, you know, I remember when I got to the second step and it talked about coming to believe in a power greater than myself. And, you know, we still do the same things early in our recovery. And at the time I was seeing another addict that was still using, actually. You know how you can't let go? You know, they say change people, places, and things. But he was one of the kind of persons that would come late at night that you just can't say no to. And I remember having been around this program for a while and hearing the message that I needed to let go of old people, places, and things. And when someone's coming around you and they're getting high and you're not getting high and you got a few months clean, it's like really hard because you don't know whether or not you want to stay here. And I wasn't really sure, but I knew I didn't want to go back to where I'd been. So I was on the second step at the time with my sponsor, and somewhere I made a decision. It's like, you know, I need to try to use this. I need to use these steps and principles in my life. So he called me, said, I'm coming over. I'm like, oh, God. And that night I got down on my knees again. And because I didn't want to use. And I prayed. And I woke up like a couple of hours later, And he never came. And it's like, God works. Quick. And so, you know, my process is kind of like continued like that all the time with things and events happening in my life, and I continue to work the steps. Got on the sixth step, and what did I do? I had about a year and a half clean, sixth step, got in a relationship. You know, sixth step is probably the best time. It's the best time. But it was all good. But one of the things that happened, you know, still operating a lot in my own self-will, not really understanding what that self-centeredness is all about, you know, because I'm new and I'm not really used to letting go. And I remember Nikki saying to me one time, Yvette, God wants everything. I'm like, everything. Giving you my drugs. What else? You know, but you know, so at about a year and a half clean, I met a guy, young in recovery as well, and in about 6 months, you know, I wound up getting pregnant. And at the time, I had a stepdaughter on dialysis, and I had a four-year-old at home as well. And I made a decision not to, to terminate that pregnancy. And it was a very difficult time about whether I was going to stay clean, about whether or not he was going to stay clean. And the program was kicking in because my sponsor told me, you got to tell him. And I had never done anything like that before. Been that honest with another person, you know, in my life. And so that relationship ended. That's how I met my girlfriend, Melissa. You know, it's great to have a newcomer around you because, like, I had 2 years clean then, and she was my sponsor's sister, and she was just coming in the door, and my sponsor was tired of hearing me crying and moaning and groaning about this relationship, and in walks my girlfriend, Melissa. I had a newcomer to listen to me. I love you, Melissa. And so, one of the things that I found out about that experience is that, you know, I don't have the faith. I didn't have the faith at that time that I feel like I have today, and that's questionable. It depends on what's at stake. I know that today. But at that time, I was operating on a lot of fear. Didn't feel like the God of my understanding would take care of me, not in that way. And so I made the decision I made. And it was weird because I stayed in that relationship another like 8 years. And I carried guilt the entire 8 years. And when I look back, and when I think and feel back, a lot of the guilt was because I wasn't willing to allow God to work in my life. And my claws were still in this man, you know, after about 10 years of us being on and off together, you know, and finally, you know, God had to say, you need to go back to Rhode Island, and send him back to Rhode Island. And that was the way I let go. And what a relief. You know, because in that relationship, I found that I was still operating in my own self-will, doing what I wanted to do. I had to have him, and that was just it. So at 10 years clean, financially bankrupt, you know, because living, it was good living. Those 10 years in recovery, traveling, going to conventions, you know, the little NA couple, you know. It was great. But financially, you know, I was now living as like one person. And it's you know, what I found was that it was really hard to, you know, be able to come in these rooms and talk about that at 10 years clean, you know, I was financially unmanageable, that I was damn near bankrupt, you know. But that's what my God needed for me to be able to do. I also need to say that, at 9 years clean, my sponsor relapsed. And, you know, that was devastating. And, you know, being around here for like 9 years and then trying to find a new sponsor and, oh, my God, what am I going to do? You know, who am I going to choose? You know, and what I did is I allowed God to, again, handle that process for me. And it just so happens I asked another lady. And we were talking about it the other night, and she was my sponsor for 2 years. And it's like the gift that she came to me, because all through in this process, I'm working steps, you know, going to meetings, being of service. And what she gave me the gift of the fellowship. Because during that time, not only did my sponsor die, my sister died of cancer. And so this sponsee, she used to like to meet once a month with the sponsees. You know, it's like, I don't want to do that. You know, I got 9 years clean. You know, meeting every month. I don't know these women. And I don't have an issue with women. That's one, I don't have that one. But, you know, I didn't want to do it. You know, just lost my sponsor, just lost my sister. I don't want to know another woman. God is so awesome. He gave me 8 sisters. Didn't know. Just operating on my own understanding and not where God wants me to go. You know, and I'm just so grateful that I took that opportunity to, like, in spite of my thinking, in spite of what I think I know, you know, I follow the guidance of a power greater than myself, you know, which is God. And so that sponsor died after about 2 years. And now I'm like looking around what I'm going to do, you know, because one of the things that happens, you know, is that as you stay around here, you know, people with time stop coming to meetings. So I'm looking around. You know, I need help. And God put another lady in my life, and she's my sponsor today, Carolyn. She lives in Vegas. And I called her this morning. And, you know, all of these women have been like God sent to me. It wasn't, you know, I didn't look to see if you had this or that or the other. You know, a lot of times I'll get in meetings now and I'll hear people say, oh, you need to have, what do they say? Working knowledge of the 12 steps, traditions, concepts. You know, my sponsor told me you can sponsor anyone. You clean for a year, you could tell somebody how to stay clean for a year. You know, and when I got clean, maybe they just didn't have a lot of people with time, you know, in Narcotics Anonymous. So, you know, but I've managed to stay clean, you know, with the guidance of God. So let me tell you about what's happening right now. So I haven't been in a relationship in a long time, real long time. Briefly, about 4 years ago, I had a little fling. Then about a year ago, I had like a one-night stand. So I celebrate in January. We have what we call a 24-hour room in North Dade area, and we have meetings like from the every 2 hours, and they go from Christmas Eve all the way through after the New Year. Great time. And I love to play cards. I'm a beer whiz player. So, you know, I'm playing cards with this guy, and he's, you know, like giving me the talk. He don't know me. So, but I'm checking him out now, you know.
So I asked one of my sponsees, who is that? He said, oh, he plays cards with us. I'm like, okay. So I'm learning a big lesson. You know, it's like, I don't do a lot of stuff. You know, I'm allowing God to, like, work it out for me because it's just something I can't do. So one night she calls me and she said, Yvette, you know, this guy wants your number. I'm like, why he want my number? It's like, you know why he wants your number. It's like, okay, you give it to him. So he's relatively new in this program. He's not a newcomer. He is relatively new to Narcotics Anonymous and a bit obsessive. So he started calling me every day, 2-3 times a day, 2 hours at a time. And I'm loving it. So listen, after like about 30 days, right, he don't call. Now I'm jonesing. I'm like, I feel like I'm coming off crack. I'm like, oh no, this is like too much. So you know how you men are, you know, he wanted to talk about this, wanted to talk about that, and right now I'm working like 6 and 7 step with my sponsor. So, you know, and I've been working on like procrastination, being judgmental, you know, some fear. And all of a sudden I start lusting. It's been like 4 months of hell, I'm telling you. And I've never had that experience before, you know, because usually God has, like, been so great with me. You know, it's like I'm not in a relationship. Okay, God, take me. You know, and my sponsees come to me. It's like, oh, I'm lusting. I'm like, pray. So now I'm praying, you know. I'm really, God, you know, help me. Help me, God. Very nice man, you know. So some other stuff has been kicking up, you know, for me. And it's like all my relationships have been long-term, you know, 16 years, 10 years, you know, pretty much all my adult life, you know. You know, I don't like play around, so, you know, I really get you and you're mine. But all of a sudden now, you know, I'm like, I don't want no man. You're not my man. Just because you call me every day, you're not my man. It's like, I'm not your woman. Don't tell people I'm your woman. So now I'm afraid of commitment. It's like, I don't want to be committed. I want to be free. You know, I talked to my sponsor, you know, and she said, Yvette, you're probably as emotionally healthy as you've ever been. You know, and it's like I'm in a place that I've never been before. Not needy. Okay with just me and God. You know? But the guy says, you're not going to run me away. And my sponsor says, take it a day at a time. She said, but I got advice for you. You know, you're going to always have more time than this guy. That's not going to go away. You're probably not going to agree on most things. And that's true. And so I find myself, you know, really taking this process a day at a time with him. And he tells me, you know, it's so weird, I'm so rebellious, you know. I mean, it's like the defects of character really just don't go anywhere. We work on them, we get better at them. You know, some days we're really better and some days we're really not better. And he was saying, it's like we're talking at, you know, like 2 o'clock and I work every day, you know. But, you know, it's like I don't want to put the phone down. And he's saying, well, you know, you probably need to go to bed. And I'm like, don't tell me what to do. He says, the best way for me to get you to do something is say, do it. do the opposite, and you will, you know, and I do, and it's like, I, you know, it's just that rebellious spirit, and so I, in the process, in this process, I've been calling on my sponsor a lot, you know, I've been calling her on her more in these last 4 months than I have in, like, these last, you know, 7 years, and she said, oh, Yvette, this is, like, so great. And I'm like, what? She says, do you know the last time you came to me with a problem? Peace. You know, it's like, but, you know, I'm so grateful because, you know, it's really making me really work a lot harder. I was thinking about letting her go. You know, because she lives in Vegas, and I live in Miami, Florida, and it's like I need to see you, and it's like I'm not moving off this sixth and seventh step. I've been writing, you know, for a couple of years. Really not writing that often, but, you know. She told me to write for like 30 days. It took me 2 years. To get like 2 weeks together of writing and show you how to. And she said, yeah, Yvette. And I shared it with her, you know. And it's like it's just not meant to be. You know, I'm supposed to be with her. That's where I'm supposed to be, and God lets me know that. So I'm real grateful for the women who've been in my life and who've been a part of my life and with the sponsorship thing. But, you know, I guess the thing that I would want to say about being more God-centered is that the principles work. Because many times I don't know how spiritual or how centered I am. And if you speak with my daughter, who's 22, she tells everybody, yeah, I just don't know my mom. And I'm dealing with stuff with her too, which is an awesome experience. You know, a couple of months ago, and she's been she was 3 when I got clean, and we were having, you know, a big argument, and she says, "You've never been there for me." Yeah, you give me all the material things, but you were never there to support me. And you didn't come to my games. And I'm like, shit, I gotta work. But I was at a meeting the other night because we had another big argument. And one of my spots, you know, you just never know where God is gonna send the message. And I was talking about this, and I asked her, it's like, get out of my house. You disrespected me. I don't like the way you talk to me. Who do you think you're talking to? And one of my sponsees shared, who's an adult child of addicts. And she shared, she said, Yvette, I still have hurt today. And it's like the light bulb just, like, went off. I cannot rationalize and justify the harm that I do to other people, even unintentional. It's still about me when I do that. It's that self-centeredness in me. And my daughter said, Mom, you never want to be wrong. And it's like, no, I don't, but yes, I do. I do. That's the self-centeredness that still resides in me. And so I talked to her. I went back to her and told her, no, I don't want you to leave. And, you know, she has my grandbaby. And let me just tell you this, too. I know, how much time do I have? I have a granddaughter. She's awesome. But, you know, it wasn't always that way. You know, my self-centeredness always makes me think that I got the answer. I sent my daughter off to college at 18. She comes home like 6 months later, said, Mom, I'm pregnant. And I'm like, oh, no. You know what you got to do. And that meant for me an abortion. You don't want to ruin your life. I work with too many young women, you know, who ruin their lives, you know, having babies young. You know, I work for a program that works with these young mothers, and, you know, you'll never get it together. Let me take control from God and tell you how to do it. And that went on for a couple of months, and she just didn't budge. She didn't budge. And then all of a sudden, you know, I thought about, suppose she died. Suppose she could never have another child. You know, how much do I really want to play God? And I let it go. And God gave me the most beautiful, intelligent, and smart granddaughter. Not only did he do that, like I told you, I got clean when my daughter was three. When I was using, I missed 1 to 3. Being high, locked up in a bathroom, pushing her away, didn't want to deal with her because I was too busy trying to get high. And God allowed me to experience that, the growth with my granddaughter. It was the most awesome thing. You know, God is just, you know, it's just so awesome. I just can't say how grateful I am to the program of Narcotics Anonymous. You know, I was that agnostic. So arrogant, who just thought that, you know, it was just all about me. And God has just brought me to a place that, you know, whatever experiences that I have and have had is so that I can help someone else know that you just don't have to use. Thanks for letting me share.
John C.
Our second speaker is John C.
My name is John. I'm an addict. Oh, I'm nervous as heck, y'all. good to be in a meeting. Thanks for sharing. You know, I was asked a couple of days ago to do this meeting, so I didn't have to worry about it that long. I just had to worry about it the ride all the way here, right? Across the Bay Bridge, and I brought my wife with me, and normally I'm talkative, and my brain is just locked on stupid, right? Couldn't pay attention. Trying to figure out what to do. So my thing is music. I love music, right? So I'm putting music in. I'm Earth, Wind, and Fire, and all kinds of trying to figure out what to play. Nothing was hitting me. Put some Toby Keith in, you know. I'm a Toby Keith fan, and he was singing, "You ain't much fun since I stopped drinking," and I looked at my wife, and I was like, maybe that's not the one, right? And then, you know, God-centered or, you know, self-centered. So I'm thinking, I'm not being real, I'm being real self-centered by listening to Toby Keith. She probably don't want to hear this, but I was looking at her head rocking, so... And then he gave me some answers, right? Because I got a beautiful wife, man. I love her to death. And it says, you know, if you got a good woman and she's going to leave you, pack your bags and go with her. And I looked over and I was like, okay, I'm going to be all right. But, yeah, I'm real nervous. I'm just trying to clear my brain. God sent us. So, you know, a lot of times we think we are something, but we're really not. And we have to ask other people. Like when I got clean, I had no idea. I kept using over and over again. And when I came in, that last time in desperation, my sponsor gave me some things to do. And I would call and ask him, well, man, how am I doing? I didn't have a clue. And he tell me, man, are you using? I said, no. He said, you smack anybody today? I said, no, I would have thought about it a lot. He said, well, man, you're doing pretty good. And so, you know, I got two kids, man. I play around with them, and I hug them, and I beat up on them, and I sing to them. And I think I can sing, right? So I was singing to my daughter, and she was like, Daddy, you should sing solo. And I said, like, yeah, Dad can sing, right? She said, no, you should sing solo. I can't hear you. So that just goes to show you that I think I'm here, but in reality, I'm not there. So I got to ask somebody. So I restrict it to the shower now. But self-centered or God-centered, I just don't want to use anymore. And what I know is when I'm not using, I'm a lot closer to God than I am when I'm using. You know, my story is even before I started using, I was a selfish dude. I grew up with everything. I used to be the guy in the neighborhood that had the football, the basketball, the bicycle, right? But I didn't play any of them well. So when we go to the basketball court and they would pick and choose who they wanted on their teams, they wouldn't choose me, and it was my ball, so I'd take my ball and I'd go home, right? You pick me or you need a ball. So that's the truth. So I know I'm self-centered. And my addiction tells me that I'm self-centered. Because when I was using, all I was thinking about was me. You know, over and over again. You know, when I started using, it was fun, man. You know, I used to like to go basketball, roller skating. You know, we used to go cruising in Haynes Point. I used to like to do all those things. And then I got hooked up with guys that were getting high and got to the point where first we had to get the weed. And the love boat, you know, before we go play basketball, go, you know, go skating or go cruising. And then we got to the point where we get the weed and get the love boat and, you know, fuck going roller skating and playing basketball and cruising, right? And my life just kept getting bad. You know, I'm not going to share a lot at all. I was hoping you were going to keep sharing. Because, you know, I'm in recovery, and I love being in recovery. I love being clean, and I'm a service junkie. But anybody that know me, no, I'm behind-the-scenes guy. You know, I just was helping the program committee this year because I'm program chair for next year. And by hanging out with them, you know, somebody couldn't show up, so they gave me a call, asked me to do it. This, believe me, this is not my venue. I've done a workshop before, and I burnt the tape. Because I was and I was like, you know, if you ever listen to yourself, this is a difficult thing to do. And then when I listen to my tape and I critique myself, I burn it. First of all, because I had to share about me. And that is one of the hardest things to do because I had to revisit my story again. And, you know, there are people who share about shooting dope in their necks and in between their toes and being homeless, and I was never any of that. But what I can share with you is my story was the worst story I've ever heard, simply because I had to live it. And it devastates me that I got to that point. You know, so after using and using and using again, coming in and out of the rooms, I have six sisters, and each one of them tried to help me one at a time. When I would screw over the first one, the second one thought she'd be the one to help me. And the first one would tell the second one, leave him alone. He ain't trying to do right. He wants some money. He wants somewhere to live. You know, he want. He's not trying to do anything. And then she would get tired of me. And the third one would pick up. And one and two. And it went all the way down the line until all of them got to the point where they were done with me. And time and time again, I kept ending up in my mother's basement again. Anytime I used, I'd end up back in the basement. I get clean, I get a job, I get a girlfriend. Well, I get a job first, then I get a haircut, then I get some tennis shoes, right? Then I get a girlfriend, then I get an apartment, and then I get a car, and then thank you very much, N.A. See you later, you know? And inevitably, I'm back in the crack house again wondering how did I get here? Feeling stupid again, lost, hopeless. And that cycle went over and over again. And I introduced the NA through H&I. And when I got 6 months clean, my sponsor took me with him to H&I from day one to 6 months. 6 months in a day, he said, this is your position. This is a great time of the year for me because I get to celebrate my birthday here every year since about the last 4 years. They moved it to this week, and I'll be 42 Sunday. And I never imagined this, man. I didn't think I'd make it to 25 years old, you know. I thought that I was going to be like a Vic, you know, the dude that was trying to cop and get shot. Because every time I would cop, man, and I'd get away, it was always something happened right after I left. Or something happened right before I copped that would make me turn around and not do it. And so, you know, I'm just glad to be clean. I'm glad to be, you know, in this fellowship. I'm glad that I get the opportunity to share my birthday with my family. You know, you guys have taught me how to stay clean. You guys have taught me that service is the key. First, I can't use. I got to pray. I got to get a sponsor. I got to do steps. You know, I got to get a service commitment. I got to help somebody, but most of all, help the dummy. And they told me, if you don't know who the dummy is, ask us after the meeting and we'll let you know. And I was dumb enough to do that. And I was him. But I am so grateful to be in this fellowship. And a lot of times, I'm not sure if I'm doing the right thing. Because I got in here and I got immersed in Narcotics Anonymous, and that's what I do. My first marriage, I was using. When the job gave my wife her the baby shower, I remember her calling me saying, John, we got some real great things. I need you to pick me up after work, because it's a lot. Baby, I'll be there. I'm coming. I just need one, right? I just need one. And I get one, and it was the next day. And she had to have somebody come and get her and bring her home. Fast forward, baby being born in the hospital. I cleaned up enough to get to the hospital. My son is born. I cut the cord. She's in recovery. I give her a kiss and tell her, I'm going to go clean up because I don't want you coming to a bad house, to a bad apartment. I left. I didn't go to the apartment. I went to the bank account. I wiped it out. 3 days later, I show back up. I don't know how her and the baby got home. You know, self-centered. So what I'm telling you is, I know I'm better than I was. I know I'm less self-centered than I was because I got a long way to go. I can only go forward. So what I do is I try never to live the way I was living before, never repeat the things the way I was living. And by doing that, I'm guaranteed to be more God-centered than self-centered. Because as long as I'm staying clean, I feel like God got his hands around me. Because I know for a fact that I can't do this by myself. And the fact that I'm able to open myself up and reach out to you guys and follow directions tells me that I'm more God-centered than self-centered. But the minute that I decide, which I have done before, you know, there were those seven things that everybody told me to do to stay clean. As soon as I would, you know, get a haircut, I decide seven was just way too much. Maybe I'll do six. And I'm in a crack house again, right? And I couldn't understand it, and I was always one of those guys that I always wanted to know, why do I keep getting high? And that's what I kept focusing on, asking my sponsor, why do I keep getting high? And he shared something real simple with me. He said, John, let me ask you a question. If there's a dog chewing on your ass, just biting the crap out of you, are you concerned about getting him off or where he came from? Right? So he said, man, staying clean must come first. And if I stay clean and I practice the principles of Narcotics Anonymous, I might find out why I used, but the most important thing is I'll find out how not to use again. Don't worry about that. A lot of stuff I'd ask, he'd be like, man, don't worry about that. Just keep coming to me. Don't use. Do some fucking step work. I'm service, man. I love service. You know, service keeps me clean. My sponsor after 30 days, H&I. You know, I do H&I. I'm an active member of my home group. Every 3 years, I serve on in some capacity at the convention. I'm looking forward to, you know, to being a part of this thing next year. And I hear the stories about people that use again, because I've been around for a while, and I relapsed a lot, you know, over and over again. I've been to about 4 in-house treatment centers and a couple of outpatient treatment centers, and that story sound like mine. When I stopped coming to meetings, stopped doing service work, and start focusing more on the outside stuff, I use again. And there's people that have a lot of time to do that. And this is my thing, and talk to me after the meeting. Because there's a lot of people who have a lot of time and I have 14 years clean. I'm real young in recovery. And there are people that show up for conventions, right? They show up 2 weeks before they're ready to celebrate to get a group conscience, you know, and then they celebrate 9 years clean and share that I haven't been in a meeting 6 months. Okay, well, you got a newcomer there saying, well, where the fuck were you the last 30 days? Where were you when I needed help? And then you got people that come to the holiday marathons and share an hour, because they got to get a year's worth of shit off of them. You know? And this is me. This is me. And I know, and the thing that I know about myself, and I can be honest with it, is the more I judge people, the more I hurt me. Mm-hmm. But what I do is, there's two things I can learn in Narcotics Anonymous, is how I want to be and how I don't want to be. And you guys are giving me lessons. Because I have a real problem with that, man. There's a rash in my area, people bringing animals to meetings, you know. I don't understand that. Birds and dogs, and, you know. I got some fantastic toys since I got clean, and some of them y'all don't want me to bring to meetings. For real. You don't. You don't. You don't want me to bring them to meetings. And I don't have a lot of time, but what I'm trying to share is a distortion from what I used to get and what I'm getting now. So I feel it's important for me to keep coming to meetings, because I need y'all like y'all need me. One thing about Narcotics Anonymous, it's going to survive without me, but I'm fucked without Narcotics Anonymous. Still trying to calm down. I can't. But what I can tell you guys is, if I stay in here, there's something I never have to do again. And that's, you know, the last time I used, I was... got clean again, got a good job, but I'm riding the bus now because I can't get insurance, and can't afford a lot of things because I had a lot of wreckage. So I'm riding the bus, but, you know, I'm a skilled guy, so whatever I do, I make a lot of money. And on my way home, I'm on this bus, and I'm a couple of stops from my dealer. And I remember you guys telling me, John, you never have to use again. If you don't want to use, drop to your knees. Ask God to relieve you of the obsession. And I remember being on the Metro bus, crowded with people, and I'm going down Georgia Avenue, and I live in an Oxford house at this time, and I didn't want to stop and get high. And the closer I got to that bus stop, my stomach was flipping. And I remembered how stupid I felt after all my money was gone. and I was in that crack house. And I dropped to my knees on this bus, and I prayed to God to relieve me of the obsession to use. And when I woke up, I was a block away from my Oxford house. And I called each one of my sisters, right? And I told them I thought I was going to die. Because it was an experience I had never felt before. Because my story is, when I want to get high and I got a pocket full of money, I'm getting high. So I called my sisters one at a time, and I said, you know, I apologize for being a bad brother. You know, I apologize for not being responsible. Thanks for all the help that you gave me, but I think I'm getting ready to die. I don't know what's getting ready to happen to me. And I didn't follow directions. I should have called my sponsor, right? So after I called all 6 of them, I got to the Oxford house, and I called my sponsor, and I said, man, I got something I need to talk to you about. I'm feeling real strange. I think I'm getting ready to die. He said, man, what's the problem? I don't want to hear all of that. Get to the exact nature. I said, man, I wanted to get high. I got on my knees on the Metro bus. I cried. People thought I was crazy when I stood up. I was at the Oxford House. He said, man, you made a good decision. Your brain not used to it. Meanwhile, six sisters, one at a time, screeching up to the Oxford House. Brother, how you doing? How you doing? And I had to look each one of them one at a time in the eye and say, I made a good decision. They still don't understand. They don't. God-centered or self-centered? I'm gonna wrap this up. I'm married. I love the crap out of my wife and my kids. Narcotics Anonymous must come first. She knows that. If I get high, she don't want me. She married me with 3 years, but she's been in enough of my anniversaries and heard some stories from my sister that she don't want crack man to show up. You know? And what I shared her is there is no option. There is no option. I gotta be all right. I gotta be all right. For me, if nobody else. God-centered or self-centered? I don't know. I don't know. I got a mother that's immersed in the church. I don't have much use for the church right now because I've had some bad experiences, not me, but some members that I know and family members that are off the hook in the church. My mother wants to see me in the church, but I'm a narcotic. I got a key to a church. I tell her, Mom, I got a key to the church, right? Right? God-centered or self-centered? Who knows? Yeah, my kids play sports. When they sports, I do sports. When my son doing t-ball, I do t-ball. When my son do soccer, I do soccer. I got off because when my daughter does Girl Scouts, my wife, right? So I don't have to do that. But if it interferes with a commitment in Narcotics Anonymous, I'm going to the meeting. Self-centered, God-centered, who knows? I'm clean. What I was taught was to make the hard decision, man. That's the hard decision. When somebody in Narcotics Anonymous asked me to do something and my son got a t-ball game and I got to tell my wife, I ain't going to make it. That's a hard decision. God-centered, self-centered. Who knows? But I'm clean. So what you guys told me to do is make the hard decision and reap the benefits. Whoever don't understand, they won't understand when I'm using either. Thanks for letting me share.